But, I mean, sometimes it's easy to take for granted, but it's so good to be here even singing, just singing praises of worship to God and being in the right frame of mind and being here together and resting on the Sabbath. I know, I hope you had a good week. It was a very good week at our house. It was extremely quiet. Anna's at camp, and you know how she tears the place up there. She's so loud. You can, is this being recorded? No, but, no, I think several here have campers who have been away for the week, so it is different. Good. No. We will be very, very glad to see Anna back, and I know several of you have children coming back as well, so it is a great time with summer and camp and a lot of things happening this time of year. I'd like to ask a question. Who's familiar with the movie or the book Unbroken? Most hands. Okay, that's good. Well, just in short synopsis, Unbroken is about a World War II hero who was shot down, and he survives, I believe it's 47 days adrift in the ocean, which is unthinkable to begin with, and then about 2.5 years in three very, very torturous Japanese prisoner of war camps. And he goes on, I think he lived to be 98 years old and died a couple years ago. So if you haven't read the movie, haven't seen the book, there it is in a nutshell. I saved you a lot of time right there. But I think about that. It's an amazing story called Unbroken. And sometimes when we think about life, and I know when I think about sometimes where I am at particular times in my life, if I had to write a book or it was a movie written about it, it might have the title Broken. Broken. Right? Then you get to that spot sometimes where you just about are at that snapping spot, the breaking point. And I look out and I see someone here who was with me on a spot when we were at that spot. It was just recently can start to talk about it again. But we were at a spot about 4 summers ago up in the Boundary Waters. And I've shared this with several of you. But it started out as a glorious day and we were making our way to our destination. And then it rained, and I've been told several times I didn't pack properly. But, you know, it was sunny when we left. But who knew? So we got there after about 9 hours of canoeing when we were promised it would take about 2 hours and a lot of fish and dinner. None of that happened. We got there very, very late. And I remember getting into the tent that night amidst all the mosquitoes in Minnesota, which are their state bird, I think. They just about lifted my son off the ground. We got into our tent. I unfurled the sleeping bag and I slipped into a wet bag and there was water coming down the tent. And Luke looked over and said, Dad, why are we doing this? This isn't fun. After all that work and preparations and months, right? And I hear who will remain unnamed, but next tent over from us. Like, and it was a really small tent because I tried to pack small. So we were in like the fetal position, water coming down. It was wet. And I hear someone from the next tent over saying, boy, this tent's almost too big for the both of us. Could you kill that last mosquito that's in the tent? And we had this, like, I couldn't even see Luke. We had a wall of mosquitoes in between us. And I remember going in there and saying, it's, you know, hopefully it'll be better in the morning. We woke up that morning, and I knew if it had been raining that next day, I was broken. It really, mentally, it's amazing how quickly you can get to certain spots. Isn't it? Thankfully, the sun came out, and we were able to put our sleeping bags on a line and start to regroup. But how quickly, how easily, how suddenly, we felt fragile. What's the lesson? Don't camp with me, right? You're saying if it only takes that little bit, we're in trouble, right? But that's how I felt at that point. Donna wasn't there to help us out and make food or do. We were in a spot there, right? And I think about that, and I said, boy, that's sort of like how life is. It's so easy to feel almost to the point where there's no hope, there's no rescue, there's no chance of getting back to even footing. There's no chance to get to a spot where life has a little sunshine in it. And it's so easy to feel that sense of being overwhelmed and almost broken, if you will. And you know, when I think about that, I say, you know, I look back at that time and I said, boy, it's troubling in one sense when you think how easily you get to that spot, but then you think in the Bible as well, and you think of the story of Job, how quickly, right, his world turned. Here's Job, who was so incredibly blessed by God, who had so much, and his wife, and I think it's interesting, his wife, who's unnamed in the Bible, right, goes to a spot quickly in that situation and says, what, Job, just curse God and die. Right? Broken. Just get out of the thing. There's nothing good here. God is not here. Just end it. Why are you going through this charade? Right? We see that in the Bible. I think of Elijah. You can look at it at some other point. We know the story well back in 1 Kings 18. Here's where God did one of the most amazing miracles in the Bible. We know that with the prophets of Baal, where they set up altars, and basically Elijah was saying, let's go. Let's have a little contest here. My God against your gods. And we'll see who can bring fire and burn these altars. Almost to the point where he's having fun and he's playing with them. And you remember the story. And maybe they're asleep. Why don't you try them again? Maybe their cell phone's turned off. Try again. Why don't you try again? It's not working over there, right? And he takes all that water and douses it with water to add, you know, more drama. And what happens? God just breathes down fire. And the prophets of Baal are executed. 24 hours later. Less than 24 hours. Where do we find Elijah? Running from Jezebel. Running for his life. And it says in 1 Kings 19, he said he had the prayer where he said he prayed to God. He said, God, please let me die. It's enough already. I'm not as good as my fathers. Finish it. Let me die. I want out. Right on the heels of one of the most miraculous things we find recorded in the Bible. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing how quickly we can get to that spot where we come to a spot we feel hopeless, helpless, defeated as human beings. And you wonder sometimes, is that the fate of our life? Is that how life is supposed to be lived? You see it recorded in the Bible. I think we experience sometimes those feelings. Hopefully I'm not the only one. Hopefully in one sense it would be great, but I would imagine some of you have had those thoughts, those difficulties, those trials as you go through life, and sometimes it just feels that's the story of mankind. It's the story of how we live sometimes. But is it the way God intended it to be? This afternoon I want to look at one story we know quite well. Look at a story and draw some lessons. Draw some lessons in terms of life and victory. Right? On this Independence Day weekend, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about that experience that we all go through. And if we had time, we'd all have different stories we could talk about and things that we are going through, things that we've experienced, that feeling. But then what's the end result? How does God want it to end? What is God's purpose for us? So let's go back to Exodus chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17, and we'll look at a story that I know we know quite well, but I want to draw a couple conclusions from the story this afternoon. All right, Exodus 17. The story of Israel. Israel as they left Egypt after 430 years. 430 years of really slavery and being in captivity and bondage. You know, and as, like I said, after I tell you my story about the boundary waters and camping, and I know sometimes reactions to life, I personally cut Israel a lot of slack. Right? When I think about their situation, right, and what they've gone through, and I think, you know, that was one night I described to you. Right? One night. 40 years. Just think about that. 40 years. That's a long time. A long time to be in a spot that's unsettling. To be in a spot where you're going through a lot of difficulties. We're going to start this story in Exodus 17, but if you went back to Exodus 15, they'd already gone to a spot where they didn't have enough water. Right? They just leave and they got upset and they go, we have no water. So God performed a miracle. And he healed the waters and put a tree in the water. And that was God's way of healing that. But they gave them water and they come to Exodus 16, they enter the wilderness of sin, which is foreshadowing, of course, right? Nothing good is going to happen there. It's like the desert of despair, right? It's like a VeggieTales story. The wilderness, they enter the wilderness of sin, and what happens? There's no food, right? And I think about that camping trip, and they go, and we know the story, right? We know the complaining. Why did you bring us out here away from the flesh pots? All the good stuff we had in Egypt, really? Was it that great? Right? Isn't it funny how we do that sometimes? We think, boy, it was so much better over here before I knew this. Before God started doing that, maybe that's a thought. Was it really that much better? It seems that of the moment because you're thinking back to that, I had some food. But you forget how your life was, right? So there, again, no food. And God provides food. again, right? A theme. So we come to Exodus 17. This is early on. They have just left. This is early on in the trip, right? It's like sometimes, you know, you go on a trip and, oh, you forgot this and you got to turn around. This is, we just started the 40 years here, all right? We're early on in the experience. But you come to Exodus 17 and you can look at verse 1. And all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin, according to the commandment of the Lord, and they camped in Rephidim. But there was no water again for the people to drink. Here we go again. And therefore the people contended with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. And I think back, it was funny. Like I said, okay, he's unmentioned, but I'll mention him now. Sam was on that trip with us, thankfully. We played a game at home one time, and we have different questions. They say, who would you want to be if you had to be out somewhere trapped and your life depended on it? Who would you want to be with? I go, I want Sam. So Sam was there on that trip, and we had water's hard to come by. You see it around in the lake, but you can't really drink it. So Sam was there boiling water. But it was, you know, we laughed, not with smoky water. It was pine-flavored smoky water, right? I said, Sam, you can't do any better than this? Can you filter the smoke out? You know what I mean? So he was working pretty much that whole trip getting us water, just to have water. So when they say there's no water, Moses, give us some water. Sam, give us some water, right? It's that same thought process. You get a little panicky. You get a little out of sorts, right, when you don't have some of these basics in life. And that's what happened here. It said, why do you contend? Moses said to them, why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord? And the people thirsted there for water. In verse 3, and they complained against Moses and said, why is it you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? And Moses cried out. Can you imagine at this point? What should I do with these people? They're ready to stone me. God, this is getting really difficult to deal with. It's the third time already in 3 chapters we've had an issue. Right? I don't know if he said it in 3 chapters, but since they left, this is the third time. The Lord said to Moses, go on before the people and take with you some of the elders. Take in your hand your rod with which you struck the river and go. And there again he strikes the rock that they may drink, and he did so in verse 6. And he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah because of the contention of the people and because they tempted the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? Isn't that an interesting question when you get to that spot? Sometimes when you feel so much despair, God, where are you? God, are you in this at all? Have you felt that when you get to a spot and you start to wonder and you say, God, are you there? Are you really in the midst of this situation? Do you know what I'm going through? Do you understand? Are you with me in this? That's a very human response. God, are you? Are you there? That's what they ask in verse. That's what they tempted the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? So they get their water at that point. In verse 8, it says, now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. Amalek came. Rephidim actually means a resting place. A resting place. That's what that word means. So, interesting, they get to a spot where it's supposed to be a resting place, and then these guys come out of the desert, Amalek, and they want to engage in warfare. Never a dull moment. So let's read the rest of the chapter here without further interruption. In verse 9, Moses said to Joshua, choose us some men and go fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let it down, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became heavy. So they took a stone, put it under him, and he sat on it, and Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and one on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun, so Joshua defeated Amalek and the people with the edge of the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this for a memorial in the book and recount it in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called its name, the Lord is my banner. So this afternoon I want to look at this short passage of Scripture and say, what lessons can we learn from this account? Because we have people, it's funny, when you want to go back in history and you want to see how life looks and you want to see reactions, there's nothing really new under the sun, is there? I go back to spots like this and put yourself, I try to visualize and put myself, and it's very easy to think in the way Israel was thinking at that spot, God, where are you? Why did we come out here? Why did Moses? Why did you bring us out here to die? Where are you in this? Is that the way life is intended to feel? Is that what God wants us to feel? And where is God in that situation? So let's go through this account and draw some lessons, if we could, this afternoon. You know, like Israel, we are also under attack. When you read about Amalek, and you can look it up later if you want, but back in Genesis 36, we find out that Amalek was the grandson of Esau. And we know about the Amalekites, right? So related family, the Amalek, grandson of Esau. And they plagued Israel so often in their history. If you go forward to the account of Esther, you will find that Haman was of the royal line of Amalek, or the Amalekites. So you have this contention, this thing happening, and they were under attack. And if you read about the account later, because Moses, before they go into the promised land, Moses is recounting a lot of things in Deuteronomy, and he's telling Israel certain things, and I think it's very interesting. We'll turn there in a second, but he's giving them a lot of instructions about things before they go into the land. And he mentions what happened in this situation. Let's turn briefly to Deuteronomy 25. And look at what Moses says. Deuteronomy 25. And he's talking in that chapter about things, if two men fight together and having perfect and just weights and balances. And then he gets down to verse 17. And he says, remember what Amalek did to you as you were coming out of Egypt, how he met you on the way and attacked your rear ranks, all the stragglers at the rear. When you were tired and weary, he did not fear God. Therefore it shall be, when the Lord your God has given you rest from your enemies all around in the land which your Lord your God has given you to possess as an inheritance, you will blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. You shall not forget. How were they attacked? That's why God was so upset. They attacked from the back, the stragglers, the weak. God says, never forget that. Had to wipe that out. Isn't that true when we think about our situation when we're under attack? It's attacking from a point of weakness, vulnerability. It's very strategic what we deal with today in our lives when we think about our situations and the attack that is there all around us today. You know, our Christian walk will be challenged. It's hard to go unchallenged if we want to walk this way of life. I would suggest to you, if you haven't read it, there's a very, very good article. I don't know if it was the Good News or the Beyond Today before we switched the title, but I think it was probably the Good News still. Charles Millier wrote an article, and it was talking about how do you move an agenda across, five steps to move an agenda when an agenda is being proposed. And we saw that in our church history as well. You don't spill everything, the whole plan, all at once. You sort of dole out pieces, get people comfortable. And then you say, isn't that a right thing we want to do? Don't we want to love and accept everyone? Wouldn't you agree that's a good thing? And we move slowly, and we move slowly to the spot we find ourselves in society today, where people like our governor now is chastised as a man who is on this crazy spot because of what he stands for and the principles that he would espouse that are in line with God's word. That agenda seeps across. The attack comes at a spot where we don't even realize sometimes that an attack is on. We also are under attack, even though it might feel sometimes we are at a resting place, like Israel was when they came to that spot. But Satan is clever in how he attacks. And I think about society and the rate at which the moral fabric and structure is being just dismantled. We have to realize that. Not only for our children, but for ourselves as well. The attack that is in place, the agenda that is there. I think about sickness that is in our midst. How much do we see in that announcement bulletin, which I don't have here right now? But that challenges, does it not challenge our trust in God's goodness? I think of the ongoing trials that some people are just dealing with, crying out to God. waiting for that. God, are you with us in this? Right? That's an attack. That's an attack where it's easy to wonder and to become discouraged and to feel that God is not in the middle of that situation. Trials that challenge our patience in what is God's will. How many of you have gone through long trials waiting for God's answer? I've talked to many of you over the years praying, when will God answer? Is God hearing? Does He know? Is He in the middle of it? And as I said, our permissive moral atmosphere that challenges even our own spiritual discipline and our ideas of what's right and wrong. In society, they can wash over as society wants to blend everything into one very comfortable pot that fits well for everyone. Right, you don't want to be the guy on the outside who doesn't see why this is good. Right, this is very good, what we want to have as a society, and it all sounds good, but it's part of an agenda, it's part of an attack. And like the Israelites who were under attack here physically, we are under a great attack spiritually. We need to recognize that. Recognize that for ourselves, for our families, our children. And it's a very orchestrated attack. And it was all in the fine print when we were baptized. See, it was all in there, I think. I got a copy of it last week and I looked at it. And it said, yeah, this will be ongoing. Right? It's not going to end when you come out of the water. There's going to be an ongoing wrestling match that is there because there's a certain agenda in the world, a certain agenda that is there to attack us. And that's why we come here on the Sabbath and we recharge and we hear God's word and we worship and we realign, because we certainly are under attack. So you think about the example of Israel under attack, right? But the story with Israel ends in victory. Ends in great victory. And God wants us to be victorious as well. So how do we get there? How was Israel victorious in those 9, 7, 8 verses I just read to you? And how do we become victorious? Because the way I just described life, if I wasn't up here speaking, I would have tuned myself out by now probably, right? I don't want to live with this mindset of defeat, right? That we live and we think, God, where are you? And why aren't you hearing? And life is hard. It is sometimes, isn't it? I'm not sure changing that at all. Life is difficult and it seems to become increasingly difficult. Increasingly difficult. But God still says, I will give you victory. That's what we want to talk about in the remaining minutes we have. How do we get from that spot, knowing that's not going to go away? I said it was in the fine print and it's there. That's part of the equation. That's part of the good thing, believe it or not, that God is doing with each one of us. It's a part of our walk, our Christian walk on the path that we are with God. So how do we now go there and claim that victory? That victory that is there, because that's what God holds out to us. I'm going to look at a couple brief things when we look at this story. And the first thing I would say, where does that victory come, or how is victory attained? That victory comes by living for God. Living for God. If you noticed in that Exodus account that we read at the end, Moses erected an altar and put the name, "The Lord is my banner." In the original, it's Jehovah Nissi. We don't have our signers here today, do we? I wanted to see him sign Nissi. That's the whole reason why I was giving this sermon. This is unbelievable. But anyways, you can ask them how do you do Nissi, I'm not sure. But Jehovah Nissi in the original means "The Lord is my banner." And for those of you who like to know origins on that, it's in the Strong's. The word banner, I looked it up, it actually means banner. So that was good. But it also means a flag. A flag. A sail. Like a sail, and that you would see like in a sailboat. A pole. And the root comes from to glean from afar, something you can see from afar, to be conspicuous as a signal, to raise as a beacon, something that's above, right? Like a flag. And that's why I tie it in with the flag and 4th of July and Independence Day, something that you see above you, that your eyes now are focused to that spot. How easy it is for us to walk around and our eyes can be here, right? And we're down and we're discouraged and where's God? And God says, I'm here. God says, I'm your banner, I'm your beacon, I'm the light that you see that I hold out in front of you. And it comes when we say we align with that. We want to live for God. It's where we place now our allegiance. Like I said, the world has an agenda. We will have to pick sides. But God says, I'm holding out my banner. I'm going to make it clear over here. You know, because before God came into our lives, we started working with us, we had our own flag. And for most of us, it was probably the shape of a heart with our picture on it. Right? That is the typical flag that we would carry around. Our own agenda, our own thoughts, our own way of doing things, our own, and we see it all around us. Unfortunately, even with God's Spirit, that wells up at times in how we live our lives and how we treat each other. But we see it in society so much so. We heard in the sermonette, science is the answer. I'm my own answer. This is the answer. Right? That's not the way to the victory that God is holding out. You'll see in this story here that with Moses, for an example. Let's take Moses because he's a central character in this story. If we go back, we don't have to look at it, but if you went back to Exodus 4 when God first starts working with Moses at the burning bush and he's working with him and telling him his plan and what he wants to do and how to talk to Pharaoh, and he's saying, but I don't speak well. And he goes, your brother does, but can you get somebody else? That's what Moses, can you get someone else? And God had said his anger kindled. His anger was kindled against Moses. He said, no, listen, time out. I'm trying to get you to line up with me. I've got something great I want to do through you. I want to put you looking to me, in my banner. Let's go back to Exodus 4 for a second. That's what God is trying to do with each one of us. Point our thoughts, our hopes, our allegiance, our alliance, our reliance on Him. Look at Exodus 4. This is after God says to Moses, you go tell them all these things, and I want you to tell the Israelites that I talked to you and that I sent you, and all these things are going to happen. And Moses, in chapter 4, verse 1, he goes, but God, what if they don't believe me or listen to my voice? What if they say the Lord hasn't really appeared to you? So he's thinking about, isn't this, he's thinking of all these outcards, right? And what if I go there and they go, yeah, you're crazy. That never happened. We're not following you, right? The Lord said to him, what's in your hand? And he said, a rod. And he said, cast it on the ground. He cast it on the ground. And it became a serpent, and Moses fled from it. And the Lord said to Moses, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. And he reached it out, and it became a rod in his hand. Right, something Moses used all the time that was a part of his life. He threw it down, brought it back, and it was a rod. And what does it say in chapter 4, verse 20? Then Moses took his wife and his sons, and he set them on a donkey, and he returned to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the rod of God in his hand. No longer was it Moses' rod, it was the rod of God. You know, sometimes in our life, I think Moses had to throw that down and surrender and let God take over. Now this rod was no ordinary rod, was it? It was now described as the rod of God, the power of God. It was Moses was saying, okay, God, you know what? I'm going to surrender to what you want me to do. That's living for God. How does victory come? He had to step out and cast down that rod, and God replaced it now. His authority, His providence, His direction, His goals in life could take over. It's no longer now was it about Moses. No longer was it. Now it was living for God, living to glorify God. And I think about that sometimes if we could, in His fullness, surrender and allow God to come now and live powerfully to His glory, to do things that would just reflect Him and everything He wants, would there not be victory in that equation? One of my favorite comedians that I really, really enjoy was a man, John Panette. Unfortunately, he died too young, but he was a very, very funny man, and he was a heavyset man, and food was very, very important to him. So a lot of his jokes and humor were about food. And he always talked about people when he was waiting in line and they would go to McDonald's wondering what they're going to get. He'd say, they have hamburgers. Right? Get out of the line. Get out of the line. You're holding up the line. And I imagine if he was talking about this with us right now, he'd say, you know, do God's will. Get out of the way. Just get out of the way. Right? It's not about us. It wasn't about Moses. God had to come and say, you know what? I'm going to take it from here. That rod represents my authority, my power. And I want you to do the things that I want you to do. And I'm sure it wasn't always easy at times. If you think about where he went to Pharaoh and he used that rod, if you notice now, that rod was used to evoke a lot of plagues. Right? God said, take that rod. Take the representation of me, and we're going to do some amazing things. That rod divided the Red Sea. That rod struck the rock. Powerful things that God accomplished through Moses when he surrendered and he started living for God. We look at the account here. What did Moses do in this account when they had the battle with Amalek? He said, I'm going up with Aaron and Hur up to the top of the hill with the rod of God. And I'm going to hold that up as a banner. That's where God is. Look up. When the fight is on, that's where we need to be looking. Talking about living for God in that situation. Living for God. Moses was an instrument. Just an instrument. When this happens, don't forget, Moses is over 80 years old when this battle comes on the scene. All right? But he takes that rod, he goes up on the hill, and it's a reminder. And it held up high. You know what's interesting about that too? Who else would have seen that rod? The Amalekites. It was there visible for everyone. Where the power, where the source of strength was coming. Because we read, when it went down, it's like when we get this way in life too, right? It said Israel started to lose. Right? But when you looked up, when we have God at the center, victory was attainable. And I think about that sometimes. I've told you this many times. That's why God gave us wives for these situations. When you start thinking that, it's like, you've gone to God. Have you gone to God? When you get to that spot and you say, God, are you still in the equation? Right? That's when our hands go down. Right? But it's living for God. It's surrendering. It's understanding who God is and that we are here to bring glory to Him. It's not about us. Living for Him. Living to show honor through our lives back to God. Words, difficult, but if accomplished, what an amazing thing, a transformation of victory that God holds out for each one of us. Something else we find in this story is Moses said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. Joshua, you find some men. I'm going with Aaron and Hur. We're going to go up on the hill. We're going to hold the rod. This is the first time we hear of Joshua in the Bible. First time we hear of Joshua, right? Joshua, as like all of us, you know what? We have to get involved in the fight. That's what we're called to do. We're called to get into the tussle. You know, we have to get into the fight. You look at that situation there. Okay, Joshua had something he had to do with his men. Aaron and Hur went up with Moses to help him. Everyone had a part to play. Everyone was active in their part. You know, Moses, 80 years old. I think if some of our men here are 80 plus, this battle went on till the sun went down, you know, holding their arms up. That's a lot of things, the rod. That'd be a long time to do that, right? But Aaron and Hur were there as well, helping. I think about that. Just as a real side note, right? When you think about people who are helping to support our leadership, how can we do that? We send support. And I thought about that. How active am I, right? In prayers and vigilance to supporting our leadership. Right? That's how we get in the fight. That's where victory comes. That's a part of it, because you say, okay, what can I do? I'm not a warrior. I'm not going to go out there. I can't do that. What do you think Moses was doing that whole time, all day, when he was like this? I'd imagine he was in prayer to God, watching his fellow people on the battlefield, praying to God. Right? Prayer, what a powerful thing. And you take prayer and then you take unity and you say, God, what is my role? What am I intend to do? Where I am today, in this congregation, wherever I am, in my neighborhood, wherever you have placed me. Help me to realize, God, whatever I want to do, I want to bring it back so the glory goes to you. And then there's unity. Right? Because we don't find Joshua saying, you know, can I just go up on the hill with those other guys and maybe you take Aaron over there and they fight? Could we do that instead? No, you see, Joshua comes and he goes and he starts fighting. Right? Sometimes we ask him, is that the attitude I have? Do I promote? We could spend, boy, you know, sermons on unity. Unity within our small body. Right? You take prayer for each other, our leadership, and a unified spirit that wants to do whatever And that's a pretty good formula for victory right there. We've got to look at that and say, you know what? God's Spirit's there. The banner of God is there because, you know, if we're under that banner, we represent God, right? And that's represented by how we live, how we interact with each other, and how we pray. I look at this and I think, what a great story. Joshua. Another little side note, I was thinking about Joshua. First time we hear about Joshua. But I bet Moses knew something about Joshua. He had probably trained him to step in and do this. What is God training us for? What are we allowing God to do with us so we're ready to able to serve more to God's glory? Right? Sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes it's scary to step out into the fight. Right? It's hard sometimes, and we have any number of reasons to slink back. I think about even when it's time to give a sermon. Right? I don't necessarily during the week. I won't get entirely behind the curtain. My wife can tell you about it sometimes. But sometimes you think, boy, why me, God? I don't have anything really to deliver. It's not really, doesn't really come together. But you got to step out. And then you step out and you come here and you say, God, I want to be an instrument. But then I get up here and I feel God's Spirit and God's power. But sometimes you got to take that first step. You know, you're not going to walk on the water by sitting in the boat. Right? Remember with Peter when he said, come. Come over, right? And he came, looks down. Slips down, not up, under God's banner. It's scary, but we're called to be in the fight. We're called to be in the fight. I think, as a young boy, I think of my dad with five kids. He was coming into the church at the time and working at the Ford plant, and it was like, you know, you've got to work on Saturday. And he didn't. He didn't. And he was threatened with his job, and he lost money because he didn't get that double time shift, and we were like little birds in a nest 5 miles, ready to, you know, we're looking for food. And you think about that, but you say, what banner am I under? God, give me courage to step out. Put me in the fight. I've got to stand against what society is saying and doing. Stand up for you, God, because I have your banner above me. I want to represent you. I want to be part of your army. I want to be actively engaged in the fight. Give me courage. Give me the courage, if it means even just to, I don't feel like it, but to pray. Pray for people who I know need help. Pray for what we're doing as an organization. Pray for what God is doing, even in spots we don't understand. Things we don't know about. Even what we heard about today in a world that's, we don't know all the pieces of the puzzle. But just to pray, be involved, right, in the fight. To be on the battlefield. That's what happened here when you look at where victory came from. Everyone doing their part, and it's powerful. And I look and I'm encouraged all the time when I see people who just keep going forward, who just keep marching forward under God's banner. It's an exciting and wonderful thing when we see it here locally. And so much of that does happen where there's unity, where there's prayers, and then God can provide victory. It's a wonderful thing. The last thing I'll mention at the end of this story, if you remember, let's look at it because I think it's worth just looking at briefly. In Exodus 17, it says, verse 13, Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And the Lord said to Moses, write this for a memorial in the book and recount it in the hearing of Joshua. And Moses built an altar in verse 15 and called its name, the Lord is my banner. You know what? And Donna, could you get, I have a book in the briefcase there, my brown one, if you could, I forgot to bring that up. But he says here about writing something down, memorializing something. You know, so often, thank you. So often when we get to spots, right, we get to that, it's almost like a video game where you get past level one, level two. That's how life seems to be with, right? How many times we've been here now for 30, 40 years? We're probably, you know, you're up on a certain level now, right? God has tested us, and you're like, I'm stuck again. I didn't get past that one, right? But then you get over it, and then it's like, okay, the next challenge. But that's growth, right? It's happening. But sometimes it's easy to get to that level and say, boy, I just, it's so frustrating. It's discouraging. Why? And then we go down this path. But very much God said, remember, right? Remember this. And also, tell it in the hearing, tell it so Joshua hears it as well. Who I am and what I'm going to do to these people who did this. and make a memorial and put my name on it and says, God was here. Right? The Lord is my banner. Jehovah Nissi was here. Right? And I won't forget. And I will protect my people. And make sure Joshua remembers that. Because he's the one that's going to carry on when we get to the promised land. And he's the one that's going to have to deal with this. But I am the one who said it. You know, I have this book. It says, Trust in the Lord. It's a nice book. And I jot thoughts here, not as nearly as often as I need to. But it's a good reminder to jot down things that have happened. When God has blessed. When God has taken care. When God has made provision. Because it's so easily, I put this away in a drawer sometimes, and it's forgotten. And I get to that spot where Amalek shows up, and I forget about this. I forget, but God says, remember. Whose banner are we under? Who is our leader? Who says the fight is mine? Just get behind me. And we forget that too easily. At least I do sometimes. Then you go to that spot where you think it's overwhelming. God, where are you in the midst? And God says, I am here. I'm here. And he says, write it down. Make a remembrance of it. I always just had a good conversation with someone last week after services, and she was telling me a situation there and how God had worked certain things out. I said, you know, that's encouraging. I said, wouldn't it be neat in some ways if we could just have a book, back of the hall, no names, you write down something where God has done something powerfully, and we can read it. Because you know what? When I talked to her, I was very, very encouraged. That encourages us, and it bolsters us. It bolsters our faith. And that's why he said, you go tell Joshua. Go tell somebody else. Give a testimony. Tell someone of the experience you had where God intervened. You know, I think it's pretty telling. I'm encouraged often when I'll talk to certain people who I know are going through things. I said, how are you doing? How are you feeling? You know, God has really blessed me. God's taking care of me still. You know, because you get one of two responses, right? I don't know, it's really hard. It's been really difficult. And sometimes it is, right? We all have those moments. But it's really, really encouraging when someone says, you know, I know God's there. I know God knows. Right? He's aware of it. I'm waiting. Isn't that a wonderful? You find a lot of how we express ourselves. And it says here at the end, you know, write it down. Tell others. Don't forget who I am. Don't forget what I do. Don't forget I'm the one who brings victory. Brings victory. You know, that's how victory comes. That's what God did in this situation. He said, just remember it. Don't forget it. Don't forget. Live for me. Surrender yourself. And I will take care of it. Well, this weekend is a very, very special weekend in our nation's history, too. I think about, you know, our independence, and I think about the flag, and that's partly why I spoke about this. When I think about a banner and a flag and all the things, I think about the lyrics for our national anthem, and I'm just going to read this for you as well. We know it, but I'll just read it because I think it's good to hear the words. I won't sing it for you, but I'll read it. It says, O say can you see by the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight over the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave. I don't know about you, but every time I hear that, I get goosebumps because I know the game's going to start in a minute. But I get goosebumps, and we'll see it more during the Olympics. And I think about that flag, where that flag is flown. And this was written during the War of 1812 at the battle called the Battle of it was a poem by Francis Scott Key. And it was a poem. It was defense of Fort McHenry. And he wrote it when he saw the things that were going on. But he saw through the night, as we know probably pretty well, that flag was still there. Through all the bombings, through all the things, through the terrible, you know, things that were happening, the pounding by the British, our flag's still flying. Still hope. Still victory on the horizon. Right? That's our country. We see that flag, that's what I think about. I think about the men and women who served and gave their lives. That flag flies free. And there's freedom, and there are all the values that we hold dear as Americans. It's a powerful thing. But how much more powerful we think about God as our banner. And we think about that beacon, that light that's there. And sometimes it feels like we are getting pounded. Sometimes it feels that way. Sometimes I hear of situations, and as we all do, our heart aches. It hurts when you think of the suffering that certain people are going through, but they get up and they keep moving forward, and it's an inspiration. And it's good, and it's good to share that when you can with each other so we have hope and encouragement. And we realize that as the Israelites ask that question, God, are you there? That's a very easy question for all of us to ask. And it's, we're reminded how easy and how frail and how fragile we are. But we're also reminded how powerful God is and that God holds out victory. God is there and He wants us through those trials, through those attacks that I think won't get any lighter. They'll probably just intensify as part of our Christian walk. But again, God is doing something that we can't even begin to see. He's doing great things in lives. He's doing things in ways that seem painful at the moment because we won't understand. We won't fully understand in our lifetime. I look at many of you and I know the pain, the suffering. I think every July, which is great, we have our anniversary, but I'm also reminded every July I ask why. Why? You know, I think about 33 years ago my sister died, and I won't probably have a good answer for that. Many of you probably won't in situations you have. And it's hard, it's difficult, but we know. We say, God, we are under your banner, your goodness, your provision, your wisdom, your love that I can't see fully. And I know one day it will be there. But right now, I don't need to know that. Maybe you don't need to know why something is happening in your life, but we need to just keep moving forward. And when we do, God grants us the victory. And it's good to be part of a body where people are doing that and coming week after week, worshiping God, giving our allegiance to God in a world that is becoming darker, in a flag that's becoming a little more difficult to see sometimes because of the clouds that are around us in society. But we keep looking for that. We keep holding on to that as we should. And we need to keep doing that and encouraging each other because through that flag and under that banner is where God promises victory.